ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna. Read from Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, Kapitel 1. Vers 4 bis 6, glaube ich. Ja, 4 bis 6. 4 to 6. Dann das first verse side Sanskrit. You have it. Atra Shura Maheshvasha. You see it. Atra Shura Maheshvasha. Bhima Arjuna samayuti Yuyudhano viratascha Yuyudhano viratascha Drupadascha maharatha Drupadascha maharatha Atra Shura Maheshvasa Bhima Arjuna samayuti Yuyudhano viratascha Drupadascha maharatha. So Duryodhana is approaching his teacher, Dronacharya, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And he is addressing him, O my teacher, behold the great army of the sons of Pandu, so expertly arranged by your intelligent disciple, the son of Drupad. Here, in this army, are many heroic bowmen, equal in fighting to Bhima and Arjuna, great fighters like Yuyudhana, Virata, and Drupad. Purport. Even though Trishtadyumna was not a very important obstacle in the face of Dronacharya's very great power in the military art, there were many others who were causes of fear. They are mentioned by Duryodhana as great stumbling blocks on the path of victory, because each and every one of them was formidable as Bhima and Arjuna. He knew the strength of Bhima and Arjuna, and thus he compared the others with them. Then verse 5, Trishta Ketus Chekitana Kashi Rajas Javiryavan Puruchit Kunti Bochascha Shaibhyascha Narapungavaha. There are also great heroic, powerful fighters like Trishtaketu, Chekitana, Kashiraj, Puruchit, Kuntibhoja, and Shaibhya. And then text 6. Yudhamanyuscha Vikranta, Uttamaujascha Viryavan, Saubhadro Drapadeyascha, Sarva Eva Maharatha. They are the mighty Yudhamanyu, the very powerful Uttamauja, the son of Subhadra. That's another person. And the son of Subhadra and the sons of Draupadi. All these warriors are great chariot fighters, Maharathas. Om Agyati Marandyasya Akananchana Salakyam Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I heard this is now the 12th year of the Bhagavad Gita classes going on in this room here. 12 year, 10 plus 2. Huh? You were here from beginning?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yep. Okay. Huh? And before
even before that? Huh?
No.
Yeah. And so Bhagavad Gita is always fresh, always new, always unending. Huh? So we always go through all 18 chapters. You remember? 18 chapters. 700 verses. Bhagavad Gita has 700 verses, 700 verse, 18 Kapitel. And now we start again from beginning. Beginning class. But in the beginning, it's not much about yoga to hear. It's an introduction. The beginning is introduction, it's not about the yoga process. Later on, Krishna, who incarnated avatar in this world 5,000 some years ago. I always say 5,000, but it's some plus in the meantime. He spoke the Bhagavad Gita. He's a speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. And he revealed the Bhagavad Gita, this ancient knowledge of the Vedas, to Arjuna, to his devotee, Bhakta. Krishna also says, this Bhagavad Gita, what I reveal to you, Arjuna, is not something new. It's not invented by me. It was already spoken many millions of years ago to the sun god, Vivashvan. Sun god name is Vivashvan, there's a presiding deity. God, named Vivashvan or Suryadev. He's a great devotee also of the Supreme Lord Vishnu or Krishna. And there are two famous dynasties in this world of kings. One is coming from the sun god. Therefore we see many flags, you know, of the kings, they have the sun, the symbol, the sun, you know, it's the symbol of the power, of victory and good health, because Surya, sun, is the energy who is giving good health and power. So, and the other dynasty of kings is from the Soma, from Chandra, from moon god. Sometimes I will make some German words. So there's one famous line coming from the moon god. So these are the two kingly royal dynasties coming from these two great devatas of the universe, the sun and the moon. They're even visible today, now, so they're always here in this universe and since millions of years, since time immemorial. Sun, the moon is here and the stars. And the kings, they're descending from these two dynasties. And in the dynasty of the moon god, who appeared? Which famous avatar appeared? Who remembers? You know? No? Come here. Ramachandra, Sitaram. Huh? You heard about Sitaram, Ramachandra? Sitaram Chaya Sitaram, Sitaram Chaya Sitaram, Raghupati Raghava Racharam, Patita Pavana Sitaram, Sitaram Chaya Sitaram, Sitaram Chaya Sitaram. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Shri Ram Jai 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 Ram Shri Ram Jai 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 Ram Shri Ram Jai 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 Ram Raghupati Raghava Racharam Patita Pavana Sitaram. So Raghupati, he appeared in the Raghu dynasty, coming from the sun god. He's coming from sun god, not moon god. For moon god, Krishna appeared. Avatar. He comes also as an avatar in the moon god dynasty. Whenever an avatar comes, or descends, he comes avara. Avatar means he's coming down. He's not falling. Not like we conditioned souls, we are dropped down from the spiritual sphere. We're dropping down because we were not qualified there. We had some impurities. Therefore, we are now conditioned and going through the samsara, through the cycle of birth and death. It's called samsara. And the conditioned soul is always in contact with, in the material world, with Maya, with the illusory energy, since time immemorial. Seit unvordenklichen Zeiten, we are in contact with this material energy, with Maya. Maya means illusion. It means like darkness. It is like that what it is not. It's an illusion. It's like a dream. We dream something, but in the morning we wake up, you know, maybe you dream you're a king or you became a lotto millionaire. But in the morning, still, you're the same. So it's illusion. But God, or Bhagavan, is an eternal reality. Vishnu, Krishna, Ram, they're an eternal reality. They're from the spiritual sphere. It's called Vaikuntha. Kunta means misery, and Vaikuntha means no misery. That means the spiritual world where there is no misery, and material world means Kunta, misery. Because there is the repetition of birth, old age, disease, and death. It's repeated again and again. Life after life. The jiva, the soul, the atma, travels from one body to another. And in this way we come in contact with good elements and with favorable and with good elements, with the material duality. And we're struggling very hard with this material energy since very long time. It's a battle. Actually, material life is a battle. It's a battle with the material energy. Because the material energy is not our element. It's not our reality. Because the Atma, the soul, doesn't belong to the material energy. It's not our world. We belong to the spiritual world. We belong to God, to Bhagavan. That's our eternal relationship. There is Ananda. There is happiness. There is peace. Shanti. There is eternity, no misery, no birth, no old age, no disease, no death. Everything there is auspicious, no misery, no kunta, only vaikunta. So in the material world, we are in the world of kuntas, and therefore we are in the world of duality, and in the duality means darkness and light. God is always in the light. It's never in darkness. Only the the living entities in the material world who are conditioned, who take shelter in this material guna. Guna means like a rope. We're bound up, gefesselt, gebunden. Therefore, bondage, Bindung, bondage, comes from guna. Guna. So we are bound up to this material energy since time immemorial. And we become influenced by tamaguna, rajaguna, or sattvaguna. These are the three gunas. And they're always changing. Sometimes sattvaguna is prominent, sometimes rajaguna, sometimes tamaguna. It's always changing. But the soul is actually always pure. But because it identifies itself so much with these gunas, like in a dream, we identify so much with the dream that the jiva, the soul, considers himself, I'm a tamaguna, I'm in rajaguna, I'm in sattvaguna. So he is in, and according to that, he's either feeling himself very good, very peaceful, very happy, successful, I'm a good person. And the one in rajas, he wants always to accumulate more and more wealth, working very hard, schaffe, schaffe, Häusle baue, how we say in German.
In
the Schweiz
auch.
Oh, yeah. Believe it or not, they also build houses there. You know? Everywhere. Everyone is building, and then what happened after building? Destruction. They destroy it, that we can build again. So this way, it is economy is going on, not? Die Wirtschaft wird angeschwungen, nicht durch Erschaffen und Zerstörung. Und dazwischen ist, in between ist, Maintenance. That's guna, Sattva-Guna. Sattva-Guna is Maintenance. To maintain is difficult. To create is easy. To destroy also is easy. But to maintain is difficult. That's actually the importance to the steadiness, the maintenance. But in the material world, it's practically not possible to maintain to stay in the material world in just in maintenance, because these two elements of creation and destruction, building up something and destroying, it's always very strong. And the tugend, sattva-guna, goodness, becomes in this way suppressed. It doesn't become prominent because people don't like it. Die Leute wollen es nicht. Sie kaufen nur das, was sie wollen, oder? Was ihnen schmeckt und was ihnen gefällt. What is tasty? What gives us sense gratification? And therefore, nobody wants to get the goodness, the Tugend. It's verpönt. Nobody likes it so much, this Tugend. But it's actually the Tugend, the goodness, Sattva-Guna, it's next to God. That's most near to God. Although it is still a material guna, the goodness. Sattva-guna is still material. One is not a yogi if one is in sattva-guna. One is not a transcendental, because a yogi means transcendental. It becomes transcendental to the gunas, to all three, even to sattva, even to goodness. Therefore, the platform of realization of God or Krishna is called Shuddha Sattva. The pure goodness. That means where there is no more material goodness in it. It is transcendental goodness. And this level is called Vasudev or Vishuddha Sattva. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shaptitam. That's the Bhagavatam, Shiva telling to his wife Parvati, also previously Sati. He taught her in this process of transcendental meditation where he explained her that the supreme yogi, like Shiva, is the best of all yogis, is Yogeshwar. He is always absorbed in the transcendental level. He's never in touch with the material energy. Sati, his energy, that means Durga, Kali, she is in touch with material energy, and therefore she sometimes cannot understand the position of her husband, Shiva. So therefore Shiva instructed her about the highest level of self-realization or transcendence of a yogi, who is not touched by the material energy. Shiva was once invited to a yajna, to a sacrifice of Daksha. Daksha is a prajapati. He's a father of mankind, of many people, descendant of Brahma, the creator of the universe. So in previous times, they performed many, many yajnas, Agnihotra yajnas, for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord and for the devatas. So they also invited Shiva. Shiva was sitting there in meditation. He was completely peaceful. He's actually not attached to fruity Agnihotra yajnas, because he's already aloof, above these yajnas. He's not, but he's invited, so he's one of the main devatas, demigods of this universe, so he was invited, so he came. So, and all other great sages and brahmanas and yogis were present there, because it was a big event. Like a big party where the high society from the whole universe appeared. And they to show themselves up, you know, in the best dresses and the best civilized manner and way presenting themselves. So they came there. And then Daksha ultimately came. Brahma was also there, the creator. Daksha came. He's the Prajapati. He was the leader of all the Prajapatis. But he was very proud. Because he's the leader, you know, of all the great procreators, you know, of the universal affairs, of the universal creation. So he was very, very proud, very effulgent, of course, also, very prestigious. So he came. Everyone rise from their seat, you know. Offered greetings, you know, and respect, namaskar, you know. But two persons didn't rise from the seat to greet him. It was Brahma, his father, because he is the creator, and the other one, Shiva. So when Krishna, Daksha, he could understand, my father doesn't have to rise and greet me. I have to go to him and offer my obeisances, my respect. But the Shiva, I cannot understand why he's not why he didn't rise, you know. Why he's not rising? Why he didn't offer me respect? After all, you know, Shiva married my youngest daughter, Sati. Although I didn't like to give her to him. But it was Brahma's idea, my father's idea, and it was Sati somehow to choose this Shiva. No? Although Shiva, you know, he has no home. He doesn't live in the palace. He has no house. No? He's not even dressed properly. And just look at his behavior, like a crazy man, like a ghostly hunted person. His body, all over his body is smeared with ashes. His garland here, you know, is made of skulls of the dead, of dead personalities from the crematorium places. That's his garland, you know. Actually, the Acharya say that the skulls, you know, of the great Mahatmas, great souls, but he decorates his chest with these skulls. Look at him, you know, he has his skull garland. He has a crescent moon, half moon, on his matted hair locks. His hair, you know, it's looks like, I don't know, like a hippie, like modern hippie, you know. Completely weird, you know, not cultivated, not cultured. And his associates, look at his associates. Bhutas, Pisachas, Yakshas, all kinds of very strange personalities, ghostly like, very ferocious and fearful. They are his associates. They even call him Bhutanath, the lord of the very fallen, degraded entities, who didn't even get proper bodies anymore because of their sinful life. But Shiva is very merciful to them. It's Bolnath. Very merciful. The Lord of the simpletons. For those who are very simple, very naive. So he's their Lord. So Daksha, he considered himself Aryan. I'm a civilized man. I have proper behaving, I dress myself properly, suit and tight. You understand? Suit and tight? Suit and tight, like a gentleman. And I behave properly. And he addressed all the assembled Aryan society there, and he told them, you know, my dear ladies and gentlemen, just see, here, we are here in a very aristocratic assembly of the most elite class of the whole universe coming together here. And we have here this very important yagya sacrifice for the pleasure and for the benefit of the Lord, for the pleasure of the Lord, for the benefit of the whole universe, for prosperity. But here we have some renegade, an Aussteiger, some person non gratia in our assembly who doesn't show proper etiquette, proper standard of behavior. He's not rising and offering respect to me. No. He don't, you know, to me. Therefore, I make a declaration, this person should not be invited anymore for this conference and for this yagya here. We should not give him any attention anymore, not invite him anymore in the future. And then, of course, uproar, some revolution started from the Shiva followers and the Brahmana followers, for the Vedas followers, and then practically a battle started, you know, there, and the whole destruction and mass started, and the whole process of yagya was disturbed. Yagya should be performed in peaceful mind, not with false ego, not with proudness, not with with some name, fame, and adoration. This is, one has to be very peaceful, selfless in the yagya. But the whole yagya was destroyed because mode of sattva-guna was not maintained, was not established, and tamaguna took over and destroyed everything. Ultimately, Shiva, in the meantime, he didn't take any side. He's like Krishna. Krishna never takes side because he's super soul. is Paramatma. He doesn't take side to the good and to the bad. In the material duality, he has no side. He's not partial to anyone. Krishna tells in the Gita, I'm not partial to anyone. He's neutral because he always meditates about the super soul in the heart. Shiva is always equipoised, equal to everyone, because he always sees super soul in everyone's heart. And somebody who sees the super soul in everyone's heart, he doesn't have to offer external respect or dandavat pranam externally, you know, symbolically. He already offers respect to every living entity, because in every living entity's heart is the super soul, is the Paramatma. So for Shiva, there was no need that he offered separate respect to somebody's body, just out of his false ego, ahankar, false image he had. To increase his false ego, his puffed up nature. For Shiva, he just left. He didn't took side in this fight between so-called goodness and darkness. So he left. He went back to Kailash, to his residence. In the meantime, it happened that Daksha again wanted to perform another yagya. He wanted to rejuvenate and revive this yagya who was destroyed previously. So he again sent invitation all over the universe to invite all the great demigods, sages, brahmanas, rishis, yogis, and gods, demigods. And everyone came on their vimanas, heavenly airplanes that came from higher regions to the place. And Sati, who was there sitting next to Shiva, who was always in meditation, she sees, you know, that all these devas and their wives, no, they come in their beautiful vimanas, you know, going to that yagya of her father. So she knocked on Shivaji, you know. Because he was in meditation, he was not in external consciousness. She tried to bring him out of consciousness, of meditation. And that's very difficult sometimes. So she tried, you know. And then somehow the Shiva opened his eyes and he heard his wife whispering to him, just see, you know, all these airplanes going by here from all over the universe, the Vimanas, with all the demigods and all the devis, all the in beautiful dress and like that, and they all go to my father's yagya, and we are sitting here. We should also go. We should also go. Right? But Shiva says, my dear, we should not go, because we are not invited. We should not go to a place where you are not invited. It's not proper. It's not proper etiquette. So, but Sati was very passionate. No, I want to go because there's my mother, my sisters, all personalities I know, I like to see them, I want to greet them, I also want to be seen and be seen, saying, sehen und gesehen werden, oder? And so I want to go there. Shiva says, okay, you can go if you like. I stay. And she decided to go, she left. She went full ahead, you know, to this place. And all the followers of Shiva followed her. The Bhutas, Pishachas, Yakshas, Rakshasas. they all followed her to that place. Nandi, the bull carrier of Shiva also. So in this way she came there. She also had her parrot with her and a mirror.
And she arrived there, and it exactly happened what Shiva prophesied. You are not invited. Because you are related to me, although you are the pet daughter, the pet child of your father, he will not greet you. He will neglect you. He will ignore you. And out of fear of your father, your daughter, your sisters, and also your mother will not greet you properly, will not give you proper attention. And then you will become hurt. You feel offended. So Sati went there. And exactly it happened. So she became very angry because everyone ignored her, especially her father. And she thought, my name is Dakshayani. Dakshayani means I'm the daughter of Daksha. I'm his pet child, but he doesn't like me anymore because I'm married with Shiva. So he doesn't like me. So I will give him back my body. So Sati, she decided to give up her body in front of her father. She was dressed like you in saffron robe, no? Like you. Saffron robe, no? Completely in meditation. Because she learned that from Shiva. She was also yogini. So she was completely absorbed, dressed in saffron. And she meditated about the fire element, Agni. And from that fire element, fire appeared from her body and burned her body. And then a complete mess appeared again in that yagya. And the message went to Shiva. And Shiva heard, Sati gave up her body because of Daksha. He didn't give her attention, but I told her. So he became very angry. Sometimes Shiva, although he is peaceful, is Ashutosh. He can also become extremely angry. Like in the end of the universe, you know, fire emanates from Shiva and this Rudra manifests anger and destroys everything. So Shiva, he ripped out of his own head, you know, this stream of hair, and threw it on the ground, you know, because his hair had so much shakti, so much power, a demon appeared. Actually, a demon means a devotee of Shiva, not an exact demon. He was a Virabhadra. Virabhadra. He was very, very ferocious, very monster. He asked his master, "How can I serve you?" Shiva sent him, "Go and kill Daksha." So he went there and he actually killed Daksha and many others who were there taking side of Daksha. And so in this way, big catastrophe appeared again in Daksha's second yagya. And those who survived, they approached Brahma, what to do now? We have to pacify Shiva. We lost just now our leader, Daksha, a very important man. And Bhrigu lost his mustache. It was ripped out, his Brahmana mustache. Deva lost his teeth because it was smashed out by Virabhadra. Another, all kinds of things happened to them, you know, like in a horror movie. No more eyes, no more teeth, you know, and another one had no more head. So the Brahma told, you know, the only thing to do is, you know, we have to now all go in a humble way to Shiva and apologize to him. Go humbly, you know, and please him, pacify him, and get his blessings. So they all went, headed by Brahma, they all went to Kailash to take shelter in Shiva. Shiva was, of course, very merciful, and then said, "Okay, we will bring this Daksha back to life, but because his head was burned in the was offered in the fire, I cannot give him a human head anymore. But because there was a goat head, you know, from the offering, from the animal sacrifice, so you can take this goat head and put it on his head, on his body. So in this way, Daksha got a goat head, and he got brought back to life by Shiva, by his mystical energy. But he could not get human head anymore. And all the others, they also got revived with the mustache and the teeth, and somehow the problem was solved by Lord Shiva's mercy. So anyway, how I came to this story is that Shiva told to Parvati that I'm always in the transcendental position. My mind, my consciousness, my senses are not in the material energy. They're always in Vasudev Sattva, Vishuddha Sattva. And therefore I'm offering naturally respect to all living entities. I don't have to offer respect externally. And Krishna, because there is no difference actually between Krishna and Shiva. Only difference is that Shiva is an expansion of Krishna for the material creation, and to show the people and the path, you know, of self-realization, to come to the platform of Vishuddha Sattva, to come to goodness, to the transcendental goodness. Shiva is the greatest of Vaishnavas. Vaishnava Yatha Shambhu. He's a very great Vaishnava, devotee of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So Krishna, of course, is the origin of all his expansions, and he's always in transcendental platform. Even if he comes to this material world, he's not taking any side. He's not partial, he's not influenced by the material energy. Therefore, before this battlefield of Kurukshetra appeared, Krishna told, I will not fight, I will not take any side. Although Arjuna, he was his devotee, his friend, personal friend, very dear to him. And all the five Pandavas were there. There were all great Vaishnavas, very great devotees. So Shiva told Krishna told, I will not fight, I will not take any side. But I'm ready to become your charioteer. That means the chariot driver. On some pictures on the Bhagavad Gita, you see Krishna as the chariot driver of Arjuna, Partha Sarathi. So although he's the Lord himself, so he was not fighting in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He became the charioteer of Arjuna. And there were two armies in the battlefield of known as Kurukshetra. It's near New Delhi, that place. Kurukshetra, it's actually originally a holy place, a pilgrimage place, where many sages and brahmanas since time immemorial assembled to perform pious activities and karma, because Bharatavarsha, India, is a punya bhumi. It's the place where pious activities are performed. And there are many holy places here in Bharatabhumi, in this India. India was previously much bigger than today. Much bigger. Pakistan, Burma, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, all these places, they all actually belong to Bharatavarsha. And there was one king, and the capital of that king was in Hastinapur, near nowadays Delhi, New Delhi. And there was this intrigue between the same family members from the same dynasty. One was Duryodhan, that means from Dhritarashtra's side, other one from Pandu,
the five Pandavas with their alliance. Duryodhana, he was very much against, he was very envious on the of Arjuna and Bhima. There were five brothers, Arjuna, Bhima, Yudhisthira, Nakula, Sahadev, the five Pandavas brothers. So they were all great devotees of Krishna, but Duryodhana, he was a non-devotee. He was very materialistic, he was very greedy. He was very greedy. He didn't even want to give the Pandavas five villages where they could live, because they were Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas means warriors, they were princes. They belong to the royal line. So they need some places, some land, you know, where they can rule, where they can perform their duties as a Kshatriya, Kshatriya Dharma. It's Brahmana Dharma, Kshatriya Dharma, Vaishya Dharma, Shudra Dharma, different dharmas for the different occupations of the Varnas in the Vedic society. So, but Duryodhana, he didn't want to give them even five villages to live. He even told, he will not even give them land as much as is a place on the tip of a needle. Verstehen Sie? Selbst was Land, was unter der Nadel Platz hat, werde ich ihm nicht geben. Werde ich ihnen nicht geben. So, therefore, the war, this battle of Kurukshetra was unavoidable. The Pandavas choose Krishna on their side. Because although Krishna is neutral, he's not taking any side, he's taking side ultimately of his devotees, those who are surrendered unto him. Yetamam prapadyante tamasatai pachamiham. To however one surrenders unto the Lord, and that way he reveals himself, he reciprocates, erwidert diese Hingabe oder like that. So, therefore the battle started. Everyone was ready. The Pandavas were ready. The Duryodhana with his army was ready. Although the balance of the two armies was very unfair, the other was much more powerful, had 11 Akshahinis, and Arjuna's Pandavas army had 7 Akshahinis. So the 50% more the other side of warriors. So there was these two armies encountering each other on that battlefield. Dhritarashtra, the father of Duryodhana, he asks, he's blind. He materially and spiritually blind. So he had no spiritually no interest in bhakti or in devotion to God. Although he understood Krishna's position, but he could not surrender unto him. He could not accept him as the God and follow his instruction. Or of saintly persons like Vidura, he didn't listen. He got many good advices, but he always ignored. He was spiritually blind because he was very much concentrated only on his sons, on his dynasty, on his family, to increase and to save his kingdom and to increase it if possible. This is the materialistic tendency, you know. I am mine. Enjoy and to control. This is materialistic energy. To enjoy and to control. So Dhritarashtra, although he was blind, already very old, but still he had this tendency to enjoy and to control. If I cannot do it, at least through my sons, through my expansions, you know, they should enjoy, be able to enjoy and to control. So he wanted to have the war, the blind king. So he asked his secretary, so what my sons and the Pandavas did on this holy battle field of Kurukshetra, Dharma Kshetra, what they did.
Certainly, they didn't play the chess. Sie haben kein Schach gespielt. Or peace conferences. To have a key peace conference there. And that's not anymore, because everyone was already ready, focused for the battle. So what they did? So then Sanjaya, he had a telepathic vision. He was not personally on the battlefield, but he could see in meditation what is going on the battlefield. So, and he reported everything what he heard between the dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. And he also could see this opposite side. And he also heard what Duryodhana told, how he approached his guru, martial teacher. There's not only guru who gives you spiritual knowledge or yoga practice or spiritual practice, but a guru, a teacher, who also teaches you martial art. Ayurveda is also there are gurus who teach you Ayurveda, but there are gurus who teach you martial art, Dhanurveda. So the Vedic literatures have information about so many branches of knowledge, science and martial art and health, how to build a house, Vastu Shastra, all different kinds of scriptures, astronomy, astrology, but there are sub-branches of Vedas. The four Vedas, Yajurveda, Atharvaveda, Samaveda, Rigveda, they are the four original scriptures which give us knowledge about our supreme source, where we came from, what we are, what is our relationship. This is revealed by Veda. The author of the Vedas, actually, the Veda is eternal. It's not man-made. It's coming from God. Aparushaya. Veda is Veda Narayana Sakshat. It's manifested by Narayana, the Supreme Lord, in the beginning of creation. Like if you buy a computer or a machine, you have manual how to use it. How to, wie man das Gerät bedient. So we also have a manual, the Vedas, how to live actually peacefully and in harmony in the universe by following Veda. Veda means knowledge. So this the manual is given by the Lord already. How to use this machinery of universe and this human body to make the best out of it, without destruction, without destroying it unnecessarily. So, Srila Vyasadeva, Veda Vyas, he compiled this, he divided the one Veda in four. Then he expanded it in Mahabharata, the fifth Veda, Mahabharata. Bhagavad Gita is a part of Mahabharata. And then he also compiled the Puranas, the Vedic histories. Not history of about modern time, history about 5,000 years and longer back. So that what we call history today is actually not, it's modern history. And even the modern history is not very accurate. It's not very so much mistakes in it, or it's always made by the people who had the power in that time. But we have a higher history of the universe and also of this world before 5,000 years ago. And this is Purana, Itihasa. Purana, Itihasa is the same, because historical narrations are given in the Purana Itihasa. And then he also concluded all this vast amount of Vedic knowledge, and he made the sutras of the Vedanta, of Brahma Sutras. So he gave the Siddhanta, that means the conclusion of all Vedas, in a short way to understand. But this Vedanta is very difficult to understand. One has to learn from self-realized person. And we need a commentary to it. And therefore the natural commentary by the author itself is the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavata Purana. So especially in this age of Kali Yuga, the Bhagavata Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most important literature to understand the meanings and the teachings of the Vedas. So Krishna and his representatives, they appear again and again as avatars to teach us this process of Vedic knowledge. First they were not written, it was verbally spoken, and later on by the sage Vyasadeva it was written down, so that we have it nowadays in book form, so that they can read it. So that means the people in today time, they don't become more intelligent. Previously people were much more intelligent because they had by one time hearing they could understand and grasp everything, they don't forget whole life. But we have to read everything, and even if we read we forget everything. We cannot grasp and always understand and keep them in memory. That means our memory in Kali Yuga becomes very meager, becomes very small. Why? Because of our bad lifestyle, of our behaviors, habits. We are too much absorbed in materialistic, selfish thoughts. And therefore, intelligence, memory is a sign or an item of the intelligence. So if the intelligence is not is only focused in material energy, in our materialistic self, external self, and in how to make how to exploit the material world and the material energy, then our intelligence becomes shrinks, and therefore our memory is also not so good. So previously the brahmacharis and the sages, they had very strong memory. Just by hearing once, they could remember everything. Today is an appearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, one of our acharyas. He's the spiritual master of our founder acharya, Esi Bhaktivinanda Swami Prabhupada. So he was a naishtika brahmachari. That means he was never married, he had never any sexual intercourse with in his whole life. And it is said whatever he heard one time he could remember, even up to his older age. He could only by hearing remember everything one time. He didn't have to study scriptures. He just heard one time and he remembered whole life. Spiritual intelligence. This spiritual intelligence is given by Krishna. But the demoniac or materialistic, tamaguna intelligence, it's very stupid, very covered by material energy. And therefore we're doing so much nonsense and we cannot actually do something good for our good fortune on the long term. There are two kinds of directions. That means Shreya and Prayas. Prayas and Shreyas. Prayas means only thinking now to enjoy and to benefit for myself. And Shreyas means on the long term. I work for the long term to benefit, for benefiting myself and also benefiting others. And this is actually the vision we should have. The long-term vision, not the small-term vision. The small-term vision is selfish, it's egoistic. Only I am mine. But the long-term is to make good fortune for others and also naturally for myself. It's included automatically. If we are doing good to others and if we are connected with the Supreme Lord's idea and the instructions and plan,
then we are in harmony, then we are in yoga. That's actually meaning of yoga, to link up, to connect with God's words, with God's instruction. And he gives us this Bhagavad Gita to connect with him, to understand him, so that we can surrender unto him. That is the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita. And the devotee personality who has this devotion, who has some intelligence left in the Kali Yuga, they accepting the words. They're simple, they're pure, they're honest. So they can accept, they will accept the words of the Lord. Others, they will challenge it. Who is he to tell what I should do? I know myself what is best. I don't need Bhagavad Gita. I don't need these Vedic literatures. I myself, I'm the Lord. I'm in control, and I'm smart and intelligent enough. For that I went to school, not? And I went to university and all this, you know. So I should know the way to go. I don't have to follow something that somebody else tells to me. And that is our misfortune. Our misfortune starts if we don't listen and accepting the Lord's words and his representative words. That means guru words. That is very important to accept. The words of Krishna and the representative of Guru Parampara represents Krishna's words. He's not misrepresenting Krishna's words. He accepts them as they are, and he represents. Therefore, these are the purports. Bhaktivedanta purports. Also, many commentators who try to comment on Bhagavad Gita or Vedic literatures, but with different agendas, with different purposes, different motivations, either for political way, for psychological way, for selfish way, selfish interest. There's even one Bhagavad Gita, is called Bhagavad Gita as it should be, as I would like to see it and understand it, or Bhagavad Gita as it was. And therefore Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya from Hare Krishna ISKCON, he called this Bhagavad Gita as it is, wie sie ist, nicht wie sie sein sollte, oder wie sie war. Because he is devotee of Krishna, so he represents Krishna's words as they are, for our benefit. Why Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna? Because Arjuna was his devotee. He didn't spoke to Duryodhana, because Duryodhana was not devotee. And Duryodhana was a very good politician. You see, he was very clever in politics. In approaching his guru, Drona, with the needle, he wants to pick him, just see. He reprimanded him, he chastised him indirectly, just see. Tristyadyumna, although he is born as the one who will kill you on the battle, and you knew it, but because when he approached you to learn from you the martial art, you didn't say no, you accepted him. So you teach practically your personified dead, you know, how to kill you. Verstehen Sie? Drona was a Brahmana. So as a Brahmana, he doesn't look who is my enemy, who is my friend. He even teaches to his enemy this knowledge. So Drona, when Trishtadyumna approached him to learn from him about Dhanurveda, I didn't reject him. He said, yes, I will accept you and teach you. Kshatriya is not afraid of that. He is not afraid of anything. He knows his duty.
He's courageous. He has no fear. And he's following the rule of Dharma. They're very strict in that. But Duryodhana, somehow, you know, he accepted, therefore, the son of Drupad, Drishyadyumna, as his pupil, as his disciple. With Arjuna, with Yudhishthira, with everyone else together. And Drona, he reprimanded him. He chastised his guru mildly, indirectly. That was very, was not very thoughtful what you did. But just see, there are also many other warriors besides Drishyadyumna, who was born to kill you. There are many other great warriors who are Maharatas. Maharata means somebody who can fight with 10,000 soldiers at one time. So at that time, the kings of the world, you know, they were not making battle from the office or from their homes. You know, they were directly went on the battlefield to show their courageousness. That they actually were leading the army in the battle. And therefore, they actually fight it for the proper, either for the proper or improper purpose. But everyone who dies on the battlefield, then he will get elevated to higher planets. It's not that battle is encouraged. Therefore, Krishna, he wanted Arjuna to first make peace. But then when peace was not possible, then the battle appeared, because the other side was too much eager, you know, to destroy the Pandavas. And Krishna, he didn't tolerate that, so he wanted to protect the Pandavas. And he became the charioteer to help the Pandavas for the ultimate victory. And he used the opportunity to also speak the Bhagavad Gita at that time. So he gave us most wonderful concentrated knowledge in 700 verses, Bhagavad Gita. So we should read it, we should apply it in our life and make our life successful. The whole life actually is a battle. So we are in battle with the material energy, with the external enemies. We always try to find enemies outside, but the enemy is actually in ourselves. You know, enemies in ourselves. Lust, greed, anger, illusion, enviousness, jealousy, illusion, fear. These are all enemies. Kama, loba, krodha, moha, matsarya. They're all enemies. Minimum 5 or 6 of them. We are all constantly occupied by them. They try to control us, you know, in different directions. Lust, anger, and greed, illusion, matsarya, enviousness, jealousy. So they're our enemies, and if you can conquer these enemies, then you actually live in shanti, in peace. Nowadays, everyone wants to make war with others, seeing. They are my enemies, so I have to fight against them. No? Without conquering actually their internal enemy, that means these wars, they never end. Externally, they are always going on, as long as we didn't conquer the enemies inside. And if we can conquer the enemy inside, then even the material world will become a peaceful place. But it's not possible because of the duality. Because of these gunas. It doesn't give us peace. Therefore, the intelligent person, they practice the yoga process and connect with the Lord to come in peaceful situation, mind, and also teach others this process. And in this way, save yourself first, and then you can save others. And ultimately come out of this Tamasima, Jyotigama, come out of this material darkness and come to the light, come to the
God consciousness. So that's in short a little introduction to Bhagavad Gita. I hope it was a little clear for you. Satisfied? Zufrieden? Vielleicht eine Frage oder noch eine Frage dazu? Any question? Anomaly? But a nice question, not a foolish one. A little comment, keep that in mind. He actually didn't become hurt because it's like Jesus, what he told, you know, we should not hate the sinner, we should hate the sin. So they're innocent, like children. He was intoxicated by the mode of passion. And Shiva, as a saint, saintly person, you know, was always in meditation. It was not agitation. Agitated about a foolish child speaking, blaspheming him, you know. It will not touch you.
Why he was getting angry after?
Yeah, because Sati, she's his energy. She became in next life Parvati. Parvati Devi. She's Devi, you know. She's the Shiva's energy. The eternally. You know, understand? If the wife of somebody of a man, you know, becomes hurt, you know, or offended, you know, what will the husband do? He will become very, very upset, very angry. He will try to do something, you know. So Shiva is the same. He's the supreme male person in the universe. Because the material universe is the duality between man and woman. Purusha Prakriti. So Shiva is in Purusha, and material energy is Prakriti. So the Purusha is the Supreme Lord Vishnu, or his representative Shiva in the material world. Shiva, by the way, means auspiciousness. He's not inauspicious. Daksha, he thought he's Ashiva. He's inauspicious because of his behavior. I'm not giving him respect. He's inauspicious. But Shiva is most auspicious. Because he's actually Purusha, he's always absorbed in the transcendental sphere. He's a devotee of the Supreme Lord, of Sankarshan. And Prakriti, Durga is his energy, Prakriti. The Sati or Parvati. Because she is, how we say, Prakriti. Prakriti, she has this little weakness, you know, this attachment to the family. Shiva has no attachment to anything, not to family, has no family relationship, Shiva. But Sati, she was, because she had her relationship with the family, so she was naturally attached. She was not on the same platform with Shiva as a yogi. Because she had her female weakness of family attachment. And Shiva didn't want to force her. He's not a tyran, you know. So he left her freedom, you know. Okay, because he knew she also had her Shakti. And if Sati or Parvati becomes angry, and then it's not good soup eating with her. Oder Dessert essen. Und Tee trinken, ne? Dann ist es finished. Ne? You know the story. Here is there's one. You visited that temple here in Vrindavan? Shiva temple. Gopeshwar Mahadev. You have seen that temple? Yeah. Besucht?
Not here.
No, here in Vrindavan. It's one very famous Shiva temple. Gopeshwar Mahadev. And next to the wherever there's a Shiva temple, there's also a Parvati temple, or a Shakti temple. You know, Shiva and his wife, they're always together. They're not never separated. Like Krishna and Radha, they're always united. They're not separated. Even if they're separated, they united by thinking about each other. And then in this way, they're in separation, united. But in the spiritual world, Radha Krishna always united. And only the idea that there is a separation is an idea, is a kind of a mentality. Mood to increase the love towards each other. But anyway, to come back to this temple here in Vrindavan, Gopeshwar Mahadev, there's one, this Shakti or Durga temple, and her name is Annapurna. Schon gehört diesen Namen, Annapurna. Anna means food, foodstuffs, Nahrung, Nahrungsmittel. And Purna means in full. She has all food is under her control.